September the 18th. My beloved Barbara Alexeyevna, today there took place in this house a most lamentable, a most mysterious, a most unlooked-for occurrence. First of all, let me tell you that poor Gorshkov has been entirely absolved of guilt. The decision has been long in coming, but this morning he went to hear the final resolution read. It was entirely in his favour. Any culpability which had been imputed to him for negligence and irregularity was removed by the resolution. Likewise, he was authorised to recover of the merchant a large sum of money. Thus, he stands entirely justified, and has had his character cleansed from all stain. In short, he could not have wished for a more complete vindication. When he arrived home at 3 o'clock, he was looking as white as a sheet, and his lips were quivering. Yet there was a smile on his face as he embraced his wife and children. In a body, the rest of us ran to congratulate him, and he was greatly moved by the act. Bowing to us, he pressed our hands in turn. As he did so, I thought somehow that he seemed to have grown taller and straighter, and that the pus drops seemed to have disappeared from his eyelashes. Yet how agitated he was, poor fellow! He could not rest quietly for 2 minutes together, but kept picking up and then dropping whatsoever came to his hand, and bowing and smiling without intermission, and sitting down and getting up, and again sitting down, and chattering God only knows what about his honour and his good name and his little ones. Oh, how he did talk! Yes, and weep, too. Indeed, few of ourselves could refrain from tears. Although Ratajeff remarked, probably to encourage Gorshkov, that honour mattered nothing when one had nothing to eat, and that money was the chief thing in the world, and that for it alone ought God to be thanked. Then he slapped Gorshkov on the shoulder, but I thought that Gorshkov somehow seemed hurt at this. He did not express any open displeasure, but threw Ratajeff a curious look, and removed his hand from his shoulder. Once upon a time he would not have acted thus, but characters differ. For example, I myself should have hesitated at such a season of rejoicing to seem proud, even though excessive deference and civility at such a moment might have been construed as a lapse both of moral courage and of mental vigour. However, this is none of my business. All that Gorshkov said was, "Yes, money is a good thing, glory be to God." In fact, the whole time that we remained in his room, he kept repeating to himself, "Glory be to God! Glory be to God!" His wife ordered a richer and more delicate meal than usual, and the landlady herself cooked it, for at heart she is not a bad woman. But until the meal was served, Gorshkov could not remain still. He kept entering everyone's room in turn, whether invited thither or not, and, seating himself smilingly upon a chair, would sometimes say something, and sometimes not utter a word, but get up and go out again. In the naval officer's room he even took a pack of playing cards into his hand, and was thereupon invited to make a fourth in a game. But, after losing a few times, as well as making several blunders in his play, he abandoned the pursuit. "No," said he, "that is the sort of man that I am. That is all that I am good for," and departed. Next, encountering myself in the corridor, he took my hands in his, and gazed into my face with a rather curious air. Then he pressed my hands again, and moved away, still smiling, but in an odd, weary sort of manner, much as a corpse might smile. Meanwhile, his wife was weeping for joy, and everything in their room was decked in holiday guise. Presently, dinner was served, and after they had dined, Gorshkov said to his wife, "See now, dearest, I am going to rest a little while," and with that went to bed. Presently, he called his little daughter to his side, and laying his hand upon the child's head, lay a long while looking at her. Then he turned to his wife again and asked her, "What of Petinka? Where is our Petinka?" Whereupon his wife crossed herself and replied, "Why, our Petinka is dead." "Yes, yes, I know, of course," said her husband. "Petinka is now in the kingdom of heaven." This showed his wife that her husband was not quite in his right senses, that the recent occurrence had upset him. So she said, "My dearest, you must sleep a while." "I will do so," he replied, "at once. I am rather—" And he turned over and lay silent for a time. Then again he turned round and tried to say something, but his wife could not hear what it was. "What do you say?" she inquired, but he made no reply. Then again she waited a few moments until she thought to herself, "He has gone to sleep," and departed to spend an hour with a landlady. At the end of that hour she returned, only to find that her husband had not yet awoken, but was still lying motionless. "He is sleeping very soundly," she reflected as she sat down and began to work at something or other. Since then, she has told us that when half an hour or so had elapsed, she fell into a reverie. What she was thinking of she cannot remember, save that she had forgotten altogether about her husband. Then she awoke with a curious sort of sensation at her heart. The first thing that struck her was the death-like stillness of the room. Glancing at the bed, she perceived her husband to be lying in the same position as before. Thereupon she approached him, turned the coverlet back, and saw that he was stiff and cold, that he had died suddenly, as though smitten with a stroke. But of what precisely he died, God only knows. The affair has so terribly impressed me that even now I cannot fully collect my thoughts. It would scarcely be believed that a human being could die so simply, and he such a poor, needy wretch, this Gorshkov. What a fate! What a fate, to be sure! His wife is plunged in tears and panic-stricken, while his little daughter has run away somewhere to hide herself. In their room, however, all is bustle and confusion, for the doctors are about to make an autopsy on the corpse. But I cannot tell you things for certain. I only know that I am most grieved, most grieved. How sad to think that one never knows what even a day, what even an hour may bring forth. One seems to die to so little purpose. Your own Makar Dievushkin.